Current state here on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. It's Wednesday, and it's time for Current State's Neighbors in Action segment, where we feature people and organizations working to make the greater Lansing community a better place. Making preparations for a loved one's death can be a stressful and difficult time for families, but with help, a person's final weeks and months can also hold some of the most beautiful and poignant moments in their lives. And for this week's Neighbors in Action segment, we feature the Hospice of Lansing, which helps families cope with the difficulties of end-of-life care. And here to tell us more is John Person, Executive Director of the Hospice of Lansing. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Mark.
Nice to see you. Just so we're all on the same page and there aren't any misperceptions in play, tell us what hospice is.
Okay, sometimes I answer that question by saying what hospice is not. It is not a place you go for the last few days of your life. What hospice is, and Hospice of Lansing specifically, is a community-based nonprofit organization there to serve patients and their families through that end-of-life time, bringing kindness, respect, and quality to end-of-life so people can die at home with dignity, without unnecessary pain, and providing a reduced burden on the caregivers. A lot of the service we provide is really for the families and not just the patients themselves.
How do you know when the right time is to address hospice care? Do doctors help with that? How does that play out?
Doctors often do not. I think if you would ask an oncologist what they think about a patient who dies, they would tell you that that's a professional failure. But studies have shown people that get hospice care actually live longer. And so it is a difficult question to say, when do you throttle back on, you know, invasive therapeutic care to go to palliative care, care for comfort, so people can be at home in the environment they want, they can have the space and time with their loved ones. Dr. Ira Byrak is a physician, writes much about hospice. He has a book, Dying Well, and he talks about the 10 words. So those people can have the conversations where they say, I love you, thank you, I'm sorry, I forgive you, and you know, to close out the business of their life well.
Let's go a little bit deeper into the exact services that you provide. Tell us about those. Tell us how you work with families.
Sure. Well, we would send somebody out to, you know, provide an informational meeting, and then we have physicians, we have a psychologist, nurse practitioners, nurses, home health aides that deal with, you know, daily living, a social worker, counselors. We have music therapy, pet therapy, massage therapy, a team of people that are experts in end-of-life care. We have experts in other medical fields. Here's a team of people that are experts in end-of-life care to provide comfort to people and usher that whole family group through that period.
Despite the somewhat grim reason you're there, I imagine that hospice work must have its share of very poignant and downright beautiful moments. Are there any that stick out in your mind?
It certainly does. You know, we have inpatient, most of our care is in the home, but we have an inpatient facility. We had a husband was there, his wife was with him, and they said he was actually there a year, so due to his good care, he lived beyond the ordinary prognosis of 6 months that you need to be eligible for hospice care. And she said at the end of that, that was the best year of their marriage. And that's really, you know, those are the kinds of stories that keep us going. It's very poignant and validates the work that we do.
How do other cultures handle end-of-life care compared to us? Is there something to be learned there?
Sure, there absolutely is. The hospice movement began in the United Kingdom in the 60s. The Economist magazine did a survey of worldwide, about 40 developed countries, and the U.S. doesn't come out very well. What we tend to do is a lot of intensive care. About 5% of the Medicare patients consume 50% of the costs in a year, and most of that is the end of life. So we give a lot of intensive care at the end of life, which makes people uncomfortable as opposed to care at home where they want to be.
So time for a redistribution of
it? Well, sure. I mean, we're not about the money. We're a small nonprofit. We just want to create that environment for people so people die the way they want to. If you ask people how they want to die, they say they want to die at home. What ends up happening is many die in the hospital. And typically there's an event, you know, there's a downturn in their health. A family member, somebody, they, They call 911. It's a visit to the emergency room. It's an admission to the hospital. And you know the question they're going to ask, when can I go home? Well, nope, we're going to send you to a rehab, and then you're back home. They're not, they don't come out healthier than they went in. They go through that several times. And I think you asked the exact right question, Mark. When's the right time to have that discussion? The physicians often will not be the one to raise that issue. People think if there's a referral to hospice, death is imminent. That's not the case. You can have those months, and many people live beyond that six-month prognosis. So it's incumbent upon families, really a national dialogue, but it's incumbent upon individuals themselves or their families to raise that question, where are we? What is the trajectory? When is the right time to talk about a referral to hospice?
How did you end up in this line of work?
Well, I came from the board, actually, to and I was doing legal work and helped Hospice of Lansing with a legal issue and got on their board.
You're an attorney then?
I'm an attorney.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
When our executive director stepped down, I thought my skill set, you know, we're now in a different healthcare environment, and I thought my skill set, my immediate past predecessor, Lars Egedinissen, was one of the original hospice workers in the United States. He just recently got an award at the Hospice and Palliative Care Association of Michigan. Our team does great clinical care. I'm so proud to work with them.
Sounds rewarding.
It is rewarding, and I just thought my skill set at this point in time can help on the business side of our operation.
What about hospice for young people?
We don't see a lot of it just because parents aren't always ready. But, you know, we had a young gentleman, a four-year-old, and his dream was to go to school, and we provided him some care and comfort, and the school made an exception, and he showed up to school with his oxygen and was showing everybody how that works. And we wish we could help more people because it's the same with children. There comes a point where you say, maybe we should ease back on some of the therapies that may be causing discomfort and really provide comfort, care, and dignity at the end of life.
Can you tell us anything about the broader attitudes throughout the community, throughout the society, about hospice?
Sure. People fear it. And people are, you know, you don't come easily to the idea that you're at end of life. So many people think a referral to hospice means death is imminent. And that simply isn't the case. People actually live longer with that, you know, comfortable care at home because that's what they want to be. And so, you know, as I say, you have to go back and, you know, start that dialogue yourself sometimes and say, where are we? And your physicians will tell you, no, I think we should do something. Your mom should recover from this. That's the way we should go. But they often won't start that dialogue of, you know, we're on that downward trend. There's an article in the New York Times said, hey, if you told somebody, we would send a nurse out 24 hours a day if you need that, they're on call, we'll have somebody help, a home health aide will help with activities of daily living, light cleaning, cooking. There's social workers to help you. Do you want that care? People would say yes. As soon as you attach the hospice name to it, then they go, oh, you know, we're not ready for that. But if people were to come to that a little more comfortably, a little sooner, they would be able to enjoy the benefits of hospice care.
I'm sitting here and I can't help but wonder if the hospice experience, when it plays out positively, as it often does, I'm sure, if it doesn't really offer profound lessons for the living who witness this process at the end, toward the end of someone's life, and say, you know what, I'm going to live my life differently because
Absolutely.
Of what I've witnessed in a hospice setting.
Absolutely, and we have, you know, sometimes we will serve one, you know, we'll be talking to a child, and they'll say, you know, I went through hospice care with mom, I didn't do that, I wish I had known,
exactly.
Because it was different. And if you get to the point where the patient understands they're at end of life, and they say, I'm ready to go, and the family recognizes that, and they say, we're ready to let go too, and they have that time together. The experience of death is a gentler, kinder, more dignified, more beautiful process than if people are in an institution, you know, on a ventilator and getting care, which actually is not providing comfort at all.
We're talking with John Person, who's the executive director of Hospice in Lansing, during our Neighbors in Action segment here on WKAR. What are your challenges as an organization?
Well, for small nonprofit funding, significant part of our funding is Medicare, so we are affected by this sequester immediately, and that is significant to us, to say the least. We get $130 to $160 per day to provide those nurses and physicians and home health aides and social workers all the durable medical equipment, if you need a bed in your home, all the drugs, all of those things. That doesn't cover that cost. So we need help from the community to help do that. And that's one of our big challenges is to, one, to educate people about what a good life and good dying can be. And to, you know, just keep the doors open.
You've created some real believers in this approach that I imagine talk to other people about it. Is that a valuable network of communicators for the Hospice of Lansing?
Yes, but we appreciate being here because we still don't think the message is out there. We're actually trying to work with MSU Schools of Medicine to say, can we talk to those docs? and they don't teach them about that in medical school so that they know about that.
Yeah.
And that there is a medical discipline, expertise of end-of-life care, and more people should take advantage of that, and they should be aware of that.
Where is the future of the hospice movement in general and here in the greater Lansing area?
Hospice use is becoming more common, although, you know, in America, if more is – some is good, more is better, we find out there's still a lot of use in intensive care units in hospital before going to hospice. A better model might be to think about hospice care earlier, but hospice care is on the rise. And I think, you know, there needs to be some national dialogue on there's significant savings when people use hospice as opposed to more intensive medical care. There's very significant savings. And right now we're kind of in the model of doing both. We do the intensive care and then hospice, as opposed to saying it's an alternative during that last 6 months of life.
Does hospice play out, does the hospice movement play out anywhere else in the national health care system? You alluded to its relationship to Medicare a minute ago. Are there other connections, other relationships?
There are. I still think that, you know, our healthcare system is based on you get paid for a service that you provide. And it's really a paradigm shift to say maybe we should not provide services and you'll get better outcomes and to look at that. But I still think we have a lot of work to do.
How will the Affordable Care Act impact your work?
It's yet to be seen as they begin to put the accountable care organizations together. Hospices can't be part of creating those organizations, so we're kind of a small fish in a big pond, wondering how we are going to fit in. And I'll be at the national meeting next week, and that certainly is a topic of discussion on how are we going to fit in this thing? How's that going to work for us?
Clinically, are there patterns to where hospice recipients of hospice services, clinically, where do they tend to be at? Are we talking cancer? Are we? What are
it's
they?
It's across the spectrum, certainly, but a good number of our patients are just dementia, debility, Alzheimer's, typical end of life things, and then you certainly have cancer and other things which mm-hmm. accelerate.
How can people get involved? If people are hearing this interview and they want to get involved in some way, how can they help you?
We have volunteers, hospiceoflansing.org, or call us at 517-882-4500, and you will reach Hospice of Lansing.
Very good. John Person is the Executive Director of Hospice of Lansing. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We could always use more information, and we know there are great people and organizations out there doing great work, and we don't know about them. If you'd like them to be featured on our Neighbors in Action segment, please get us an email, currentstate@wkar.org. Put Neighbors in Action in the subject line and tell us why you think they should be featured for the great work that they do.